Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Chief Major General Hossein Salami vowed to continue Iran's support for the Palestinian people and their resistance. This year's International Quds Day commemoration comes amid rising tensions in Al-Quds as extremist Israeli settlers backed by troops desecrated the city's Al-Aqsa Mosque in recent days.
On International Al-Quds Day, we thank Imam Khomeini for designating this extremely important day. Imam Khomeini has called on the Islamic nation to return to the correct path towards Al-Quds, because Al-Quds is the common denominator and the core issue for all Muslims.
International Quds Day continues to symbolize the unity of Muslims around the world, and it also ensures the Palestinians that they have not been forgotten by their fellow Muslims.
Imam Khomeini designated International Quds Day to support Al-Quds and Palestine and to assert the great importance of resisting the Zionist occupation. Today, we're closer than ever to liberating Al-Quds because of our resistance. Our resistance only grew stronger following the Battle of the Sword of Al-Quds.
Leaders of Palestinian factions expressed their gratitude to Imam Khomeini for his historic initiative and called on Arab countries to follow in the footsteps of Iran and support the Palestinian people.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has been the role model in supporting the Palestinian people and their resistance, as well as in supporting Palestinians in Al-Quds. The solidarity that we see on Quds Day is a solid proof of Iran's unwavering support for the Palestinian people.
Occupied by Israeli forces in 1967, Al-Quds has been at the core of the Palestinian struggle for freedom and justice. Every year, International Quds Day draws worldwide attention to decades-long suffering of Palestinians. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Afghans in the capital Kabul have held a conference titled Quds, the Axis of Unity of the Islamic World, to mark Quds Day and to support Palestine. Speakers condemned Israeli aggression against the oppressed Palestinians and called for the freedom of Al-Quds.
Quds Day symbolizes the unity of Islamic countries against global arrogance and is aimed at supporting the liberation of Palestinian territories from Israeli occupation. Occupied Al-Quds is the first Qibla of Muslims and a territory of Muslim Palestinians. The freedom of Al-Quds makes the greatest wish of Muslims and freedom-seeking people of the world.
In order to help end the plight of Palestinians, Imam Khomeini not only initiated Quds Day, but also asked for Muslims gathering on the axis of Al-Quds. He said Muslims will succeed in freeing Al-Quds if they come together and firmly stand with Palestinians. Today we stand with Al-Aqsa Mosque defenders and condemn Israel's aggression.
Participants vowed to never leave Palestinians alone in their fight for regaining occupied territories and defending the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They also called on Muslim nations to take a strong stance against the Israeli crimes, denouncing normalization of ties with the regime.
Recently, we witnessed some Arab countries shamelessly normalizing ties with Israel. They should know that it is a big mistake and that the regime will never become a friend of Muslims. In fact, we should stand with Al-Aqsa Mosque defenders and don't let enemies' plots weaken our intention for supporting our oppressed brothers.
Like elsewhere in the region and beyond, people in Afghanistan mark International Quds Day every year, taking the opportunity to voice empathy and solidarity with Palestinians. Despite struggling with many difficulties in their own country, Afghans have never forgotten the plight of Palestinians. People here say Muslims should gather on the axis of Al-Quds and fight arrogance. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Zoonotic spillovers, or the transmission of pathogens from wild animals to humans, expected to rise with at least 15,000 instances of viruses leaping between species over the next 50 years. We have prepared for you an article written by Oliver Millman. The piece is titled Potentially Devastating: Climate Crisis May Fuel Future Pandemics. The piece has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Researchers have warned there will be at least 15,000 instances of viruses leaping between species over the next 50 years, with the climate crisis helping fuel a potentially devastating spread of disease that will imperil animals and people and risk further pandemics. As the planet heats up, many animal species will be forced to move into new areas to find suitable conditions. They will bring their parasites and pathogens with them, causing them to spread between species that haven't interacted before. This will heighten the risk of what is called zoonotic spillover, where viruses transfer from animals to people, potentially triggering another pandemic of the magnitude of COVID-19. Gregory Albury, an expert in disease ecology at Georgetown University in Washington and co-author of the paper published in Nature, said, "As the world changes, the face of disease will change too. This work provides more incontrovertible evidence that the coming decades will not only be hotter, but sicker." Gregory Albury said, "We have demonstrated a novel and potentially devastating mechanism for disease emergence that could threaten the health of animals in the future and will likely have ramifications for us too." Gregory Albury said, "The climate change is shaking ecosystems to their core and causing interactions between species that are already likely to be spreading viruses." He said that even drastic action to address global heating now won't be enough to hold the risk of spillover events. He said, "This is happening. It's not preventable even in the best case climate change scenarios. And we need to put measures in place to build health infrastructure to protect animal and human populations." Research paper states that at least 10,000 types of virus capable of infecting humans are circulating silently in wild animal populations. Until relatively recently, such crossover infections were unusual, but as more habitat has been destroyed for agriculture and urban expansion, more people have come into contact with infected animals. Climate change is exacerbating this problem by helping circulate disease between species that previously did not encounter each other. The study forecasts the geographic range shifts of 3,139 mammal species due to climate and land use changes until 2070, and found that even under a relatively low level of global heating, there will be at least 15,000 cross-species transmission events of one or more viruses during this time. Bats will account for the majority of this disease spread because of their ability to travel large distances. An infected bat in Wuhan, China, is a suspected cause of the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, and previous research has estimated there are about 3,200 strains of coronaviruses already moving among bat populations. The new research warns the risk of climate-driven disease is not a future one. The paper says, surprisingly, we find that this ecological transition may already be underway, and holding warming under 2 degrees Celsius within the century will not reduce future viral sharing. Much of the disease risk is set to center upon high elevation areas in Africa and Asia, although a lack of monitoring will make it difficult to track the progress of certain viruses. Colin Carlson, another co-author of the research, said, "There is this monumental and mostly unobserved change happening within ecosystems." Colin Carlson added, "We aren't keeping an eye on them, and it makes pandemic risk everyone's problem. Climate change is creating innumerable hotspots for zoonotic risk right in our backyard. We have to build health systems that are ready for that." Experts not involved in the research said the study highlighted the urgent need to improve processes designed to prevent future pandemics, as well as to phase out the use of fossil fuels that are causing the climate crisis. Aaron Bernstein, interim director of the Center for Climate Health and Global Environment at Harvard University, said, "The findings underscore that we must prevent pathogen spillover." He said vaccines, drugs and tests are essential, but without major investment in primary pandemic prevention, namely habitat conservation, strictly regulating wildlife trade and improved livestock biosecurity as examples, we will find ourselves in a world where only the rich are able to endure even more likely infectious disease outbreaks. Peter Daszak, president of the EcoHealth Alliance, a non-profit that works on pandemic prevention, said that while human interference in landscapes has been understood as a disease risk for a while, the new research represents a critical step forward in the understanding of how climate change will fuel the spread of viruses. Peter Daszak said, "What's even more concerning is that we may already be in this process, something I didn't expect and a real wake-up call for public health." He added, "In fact, if you think about the likely impact of climate change, if pandemic diseases are one of them, we're talking trillions of dollars of potential impact." Peter Daszak added, "This hidden cost of climate change is finally illuminated, and the vision this paper shows us is a very ugly future for wildlife and for people." According to scientists, preventing future pandemics at source would cost a small fraction of the damage already caused by viruses that jump from wildlife to people. New analysis has calculated each year, on average, more than 3 million people die from zoonotic diseases, those that spill over from wildlife into humans. Stopping the destruction of nature, which brings humans and wildlife into greater contact and results in spillover, would cost about $20 billion a year, just 10% of the annual economic damage caused by zoonotic events and 5% of the value of the lives lost. The scientists heavily criticize approaches by global bodies and governments that focus only on preventing the spread of new viruses once they have infected humans, rather than tackling the root causes as well. Professor Aaron Bernstein, of the Center for Climate, Health and the Global Environment at Harvard University, who led the new assessment, said, "That premise is one of the greatest pieces of folly of modern times. It details three key actions: global surveillance of viruses in wildlife, better control of hunting and trade in wildlife, and stopping the razing of forests. These actions would also pay huge dividends in fighting the climate emergency and the biodiversity crisis. Wildlife is known to harbor vast numbers of viruses, and outbreaks are increasing in frequency and severity. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, experts have repeatedly warned that the root causes must be tackled."
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Two Palestinian fighters have killed an Israeli guard. The military wing of Fatah Party claimed responsibility. Meanwhile, Israeli forces have killed a Palestinian youth in the town of Azoun in the occupied West Bank. Violence and deaths are continuing in the occupied Palestinian territories, but has it reached a point that Palestinians will come out in mass? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at where Palestinians stand and how Israel has been weakened due to multiple security breaches. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Founder of If Americans Knew, Allison Weir, joins us from Sacramento. Also joining us, Palestinian human rights advocate Amal Wahdan joins us from occupied Ramallah.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Allison Weir, I will start first with you. You're having an Israeli security guard, as we just reported, to have been killed near the Ariel settlements in the West Bank. And it has a claim, an entity that claimed the responsibility, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, the military wing of Fatah Party. And this comes on the heels of multiple violations that have happened at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the desecration of that holy site in as many days. We've lost count at this point. I think it's been maybe 2 weeks in a row, or even longer. How do you view the security situation based on this latest attack?
Well, it's extremely tragic. The violence has escalated. A number of Palestinians have been killed. A young man was just killed earlier today, 28 years old, Palestinian man. Another was killed on the 27th, an 18-year-old. On the 26th, a 20-year-old was killed. On the 18th, an 18-year-old was killed. On April 15th, a 17-year-old was killed. So the violence is escalating. Tragically, when Palestinians get killed, then eventually some Israelis also get killed. The violence at Al-Aqsa Mosque, a very holy place, and an area that's holy to really all three religions that began in that area, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. That's a very holy place for all of them, but unfortunately Israeli forces control the area, and rather than making an international area for everyone to go and worship equally and freely, it's constricting the ability for Palestinians to worship at their own very holy area.
Well, that's, of course, very unfortunate, but in the way that they have exercised what they call law and order, Amal Wahdan, they've actually give it a name, but it's been anything but that. We're looking at this particular attack, again, attributed to the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And it even happened on Al-Quds Day. And the types of violence that has occurred in the past weeks, in many instances, it was very heavy-handed. Why do you think Israel has chosen a heavy-handed approach towards Palestinians, at least in the holy month of Ramadan, at the Al-Aqsa Mosque?
It seems to be the way...
No, this is for Amal Wahdan. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Amal Wahdan.
Yes. Hi, Alison. This is some sort of game between politics and security. Bennett was trying to show a very tough hand on the Palestinians using all security apparatus to hit hard on the Palestinians to gain some political gains. But the thing is, they don't learn from history. They don't learn from the previous government. The five governments that were there in the last 2 years have been facing the same thing. It is escalating riots, the Palestinian riots, the Palestinian uprising is rising against the Israeli security forces and the occupation, but it has grounds there. I mean, these guys in Salfit who attacked the security guards in Ariel settlement, they're defending their lands. Their lands was confiscated by the Israeli occupation tens of years back. So the thing is, whenever the Israelis escalate their tough hands against the Palestinians naturally will react. They're not going to turn the other cheek for the occupation. And resistance in all forms is something has legitimacy in it. Even in international law and human rights laws, from the beginning, this occupation is against international law, against human rights law, against the convention of the UN. So it is very natural that the Palestinians will react. Israel is advanced in its technology, in its killing and lethal weapons and that has been used against the Palestinians. And casualties are, if we want to go to ratios, it's 5-1 or 10-1. So the only reason for this is the occupation. If the occupation is over, I think nobody is going to be killed. If this apartheid regime is over, then people can live in peace.
Well, our guests there talked about international law, Alison Weir, and one of the things that is enshrined in international law is the fact that you have the right to resist. Resistance is part of that. But Israel turns around and says, that is not resistance, that is terrorism in full display. Israel does take the narrative and twist it in order to portray it in its favor. The question is, are people buying it? I mean, at this point, how do you view it in terms of the way that Palestinian plight, especially coming off the heels of Al-Quds Day, has been highlighted to the point and degree that it has?
Well, I think many people in the United States are still taken in by it, but a growing number are not. You know, many of us remember that our own revolution against the British colonists back in 1776 used muskets and violence. It's also important to remember, of course, as I'm sure many of your viewers do, but most Americans don't know, is that Palestinians also do attempt to use nonviolent resistance all the time. Every week, every day, there are marches against Israeli occupation, and you know that's used. There's a massive march in Gaza that lasted a year and a half. Every week there's nonviolence, so they try everything, and of course people will. Some of them will respond with violence, which is understandable and expected. I sometimes wonder. It does appear to me that sometimes Israeli forces are brutal specifically because they want to trigger violence in response to their violence, and then they will blame that violence and say they're responding to it. This is a pattern we see again and again and again. I agree that the occupation that began really in when Israel was created through ethnic cleansing in 1948, that's the problem. You know, these were groups that had a tradition of getting along. Christians, Muslims, and Jews had lived in Palestine for centuries without violence. It only changed when the Zionist movement began in Europe and then in the United States in the late 1800s, and now has continued through today.
Let's roll back to last year when there was an actual war that happened, and it was after the month of Ramadan or thereabouts when you had almost the same things happen, maybe not in the intensity that it did this year. And Israel decided last year, Amal Wahdan, to attack the Gaza Strip. But it did not do it this year. There was plenty of, on Israel's side, the desecration of the mosque, along with obviously what I just mentioned about the way they handled Palestinians. And of course, the warnings did come, which we're going to get into the most recent warning that came just hours ago. Some are deducting that that's because Israel is actually in a weakened state, that it feels threatened security-wise, and attributing a lot of that because of the rockets that made it through their so-called Iron Dome system. So if that's the case, if you agree, then why does it continue with what it's doing to the, with the desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque?
I totally agree. They were scared. You know, 250,000 people managed to cross the security checkposts and the military checkposts surrounding Jerusalem. And by the way, Jerusalem is suffocated by the settlements and the checkposts. And us, we cannot go from the West Bank. We cannot go to Jerusalem, to Al-Aqsa, or to the Church of Sepulchre. Gazans can't leave Gaza. Gazans are under siege for over 15 years now, and nobody is budging. Nobody is talking about international law or human rights law. And these young men who attacked the security guard at Ariel settlement, they haven't been in Jerusalem. I'm sure that they haven't been in Jerusalem. They haven't seen the sea. So it went peacefully, though there was a demonstration within Al-Aqsa space. Didn't go out, but it was inside. They raised the flag, they hanged the flag over Al-Aqsa, but they didn't have any confrontation because there was a political decision. The government decided that they don't have to go with confrontations because they're going to get it. They're going to face another Jerusalem sword, another May 11th of last year. So they decided that they want to be calm. Yesterday, it was less than the day before, 160,000 people, which is also very good. Some people climbed the walls in order to get to Al-Aqsa because they weren't allowed through the regular military check roads. So, of course, whenever there is politics involved, whenever there is interest for the leaders, for the politicians in the government, for Bennett and his gang, of course, they will try to calm down because they don't want to pay a high price, taking into consideration that also our people in 1948 are an integrated part of the Palestinian sure. people, and they will respond from their side, and that's what the government doesn't want, what the security apparatus doesn't want. This is like a ticking bomb inside the apartheid regime. So they don't want also to trigger any reactions, any violent reactions against their measures, harsh measures and oppression.
When we started, when I asked the first question, Alison Weir, and you started talking about the different incidents that were involved with violence and deaths that happened as a result of either a raid, I'm not too sure the ones that you cited, I couldn't help but come back to you now and point and have the fact being pointed to how, based on numerous websites, one of the ones that is pretty prominent, the PCHR, Palestinian Center for Human Rights, daily violations that happen in the occupied territories, which includes injuries, which includes deaths, which includes destruction of properties, in pretty extensive. Any day of the week, you can tune into any one of these websites, and it cites all of these violations that are taking place, which unfortunately also points to civilian lives being taken. When we take a look at that, it really puts this into another light, this whole occupation, because many maybe do not realize that this is happening on a daily basis. So then, what can be done here? Where can Palestinians turn to?
That's hard to know. They've tried everything. They tried to nonviolence. They use different types of resistance. They have endured decade after decade after decade of oppression, and yet every day these things go on. Just looking at the last 2 days, Israeli soldiers have abducted Palestinians from Ramallah. They've attacked Palestinian farmers and fishermen in Gaza yesterday. They attacked Palestinian protesters in Beta and Beit Ajan that are in different parts of the West Bank, the northern part of the West Bank also. They've abducted Palestinians from Jerusalem. They injured dozens of Palestinians in a town east of Qalqilya in the West Bank. So what people need to be aware of, especially Americans, because we need to know that it is our government that is using our tax money, $10 million per day, that Israel uses to oppress Palestinians day after day, week after week, year after year. And yet Americans only get a very filtered reporting about what's actually going on there and think, well, yes, maybe every few years Israel might invade Gaza. No, they invade Gaza and the West Bank every day. Their forces are there beating people, abducting people, every so often killing people. This is just largely unknown. I think that the world needs to be more aware of the oppression Palestinians are enduring, and all of us need to do what we can to speak out and to try to stop this injustice that then endangers the whole world. Israeli actions have destabilized the Middle East for decades. They've caused the rise of extremism throughout the Middle East that would not have been there and was not there previously, that then endangers Americans and Europeans as well. This is a worldwide phenomenon that's extremely dangerous to everybody.
A quick question, Alison Weir. How long you've been associated with If Americans Knew?
I started it about 22 years ago.
Okay, so 22 years just based on that. And then, Amal Wahdan, you look like somebody, obviously, who is well aware. You can tell us perhaps how many years or even longer you have witnessed what is happening. The reason why I'm bringing these two facts and putting it together is with the tone of desperation underlying what Alison Weir said there. Imagine a Palestinian, how they feel, if from the outside, where Alison Weir said, they've exhausted all avenues. So if that's the case, and you're a Palestinian in the occupied territories, you're over the edge, which is why we're seeing perhaps incidents like what happened today, where you had the two from the fighters from the Fatah party do what they did to that Israeli guard, and of course other incidents that happened from the Palestinian sides. Has it reached a point where we're looking at the possibility of a third Intifada breaking out, maybe?
Well, it is accumulating, actually. The contradiction is rising between the occupiers and the occupied, the colonizers and the colonized. And this apartheid regime doesn't, or the leaders of this apartheid regime, they don't get it that this is the last occupation on Earth. Of course, we have the U.S. northern of Syria. We have the U.S. south of Yemen in Aden. Now what's going on in Eastern Europe, they're everywhere, actually. If it's not military, they're doing it by their intelligence. So whenever there is an occupation, it's natural to have resistance to this occupation. And what is happening in the with the Palestinians, young and young men, children, old men, old women, we can see them. We can see them all. We meet them in the streets. We meet them in the demonstrations. Everybody is fed up with this occupation, with this apartheid regime. And it's just like South Africa. How come the international community were listening to what was going on in South Africa, and all of a sudden they've decided that they have enough, and this white regime, this apartheid white regime, has to be dismantled? And that's what we are calling for. What we are calling for, if we want peace in this area, in mm-hmm. this part of the world, this occupation has to be dismantled. This apartheid regime has to be dismantled. If the three religions want to live together peacefully, sure, there is a way. And this is by ending colonization, ending the occupation in all of Palestine from 1948 to 1967. It's one country, and it cannot be divided. And it happened through 75 years now. Oslo Accords lasted for 28, now 29 almost years back, and they did not accomplish anything. Why? Because the Israeli side decided going on with their Zionist project. They don't want peace. They want it all. And what they did with the
Israel is obviously showing that it's not going to really settle for anything less than having it all, to put it in your words. And also, if we want to take a look at the Oslo Accords, that didn't even yield the promises that it had for the Palestinians. You said that the U.S. is, I want to use the word bankroll, but I'm going to use it, bankrolling Israel in a sense, at the tune of, $10 million a day, I think is what you said. We know Israel's not going to budge, so we're going to look to the U.S. and any hopes there. It seems, it seems, before, since we're running out of time, I'm going to merge this question, this fact, into this question also, that the U.S. has taken the formalization of Arab countries with Israel and has swapped that for any peace talks, were they to even happen. It seems like that's the route they have chosen to go. And, of course, the way that they are bankrolling Israel.
Yes. Before we leave, I want to quickly, though, just honor a man who just passed away, an Iranian brilliant filmmaker and individual of great Indeed. Compassion and principle.
Yeah.
His name was Nader Talabzadeh. He just passed away, I believe it was last night. This was an extremely, extremely important man who was working for Palestinian rights, for justice, for peace. He was working to bridge the differences being created by Israel partisans between Americans and Iran, between Christians and Muslims. This man was a brilliant and important personage, and I grieve for his loss. I think the whole world has experienced a loss by his passing.
Yes, indeed. So 30 seconds to answer my question, and we can finish off the spotlight. Go ahead.
More and more Americans are waking up to this. The Israel lobby remains very, very powerful in the United States, in the government and in the media, in Hollywood, of course. But it's eroding. More people are waking up. More young Jewish Americans see Israel as an apartheid regime that they oppose. So I think the awareness is growing. It's a matter of grassroots against the elites. And I
Indeed.
Think the grassroots eventually will win.
People power. We'll see what happens. Thank you. Alison Weir from Sacramento, founder of Americans New. And Amal Wadan, thank you, from Occupied Ramallah, Palestinian human rights advocate. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Vitaly. It's goodbye until next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the Limelight.
A Guardian analysis has uncovered how American companies enrich themselves and their investors while boasting about jacking up prices. We now present you an article written by Tom Perkins under the heading Revealed: Top U.S. Corporations Raising Prices on Americans Even as Profits Surge. The piece has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. As inflation shot to a new peak in March, cost increases exacted a deep toll on the economy, eating into most Americans' wages and further imperiling the financially vulnerable. But for many of US's largest companies and their shareholders, it has been a very different story. One widely accepted narrative holds that companies and consumers are sharing in inflationary pain. But a Guardian analysis of top corporations' financials and earnings calls reveals most are enjoying profit increases even as they pass on costs to their customers, many of whom are struggling to afford gas, food, clothing, housing and other basics. The analysis of Securities and Exchange Commission filings for 100 U.S. corporations found net profits up by a median of 49%, and in some individual cases by as much as 111,000%. Those increases came as companies lumbered customers with higher prices and all but 10 executed massive stock buyback programs or bumped dividends to enrich investors. In earnings calls, executives detailed how even as demand and profits rose post-vaccine, they passed on most or all of inflationary costs to customers via price increases, and some took the opportunity to add more on top. Margins, the share of sales converted into profits, also improved for the majority of the companies analyzed by The Guardian. Economists who reviewed the data say it's more evidence of a clear reality. Consumers are taking a financial hit as companies and shareholders profit or are largely shielded. Krista Brown, a policy analyst with the American Economic Liberties Project, said, "It's obvious that corporations are trying to pass on any form of short-term pain they might be feeling, and that serving the top, wealthiest class instead of those in need of fair wages or products that are affordable." Media framing likely influences public perception. News reports of Hershey's multiple price hikes over the last year read like so many dire reports on inflation's pervasive toll. The company, which owns popular brands like Reese's Kit Kat and Skinny Pop, has been cast as the latest victim of ever-increasing inflation. But a closer look at the company's financials suggests a vastly different reality. Hershey's net profits spiked 62% between the fourth quarter in 2019 and 2021. Its operating margin widened, and it recently rewarded shareholders with $200 million in stock buybacks. The chief executive officer, Michelle Buck, told investors, "Still, customers will pay even more for candy shops in 2022 as Hershey aims for even higher profits. Pricing will be an important lever for us this year and is expected to drive most of our growth." Similarly, a Kroger executive told investors in June, "A little bit of inflation is always good for our business," while Hostess's chief executive officer in March said rising prices across the economy helps its profit. Lindsay Owens, executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative, which tracks companies' profits, said, "The pandemic, war, supply chain bottlenecks, and pricing decisions made in corporate suits have created a smokescreen." She added that that obscures questionable price increases and allows businesses to be portrayed as victims of inflation. Lindsay Owens said, "That grey, nebulous area is fertile ground for companies right now, and you hear about it in their earnings calls. Inflation itself is the opportunity." The Guardian's findings are in line with recent US Commerce Department data that shows corporate profit margins rose 35% during the last year and are at their highest level since 1950. Meanwhile, inflation rose to 8.5% year over year in March. The Guardian's analysis is the first to take a granular look at a cross-section of companies across a range of industries in the United States. It compared the most recent quarter's profits to the same quarter 2 years ago, pre-pandemic. Price increases were obtained by checking earnings reports, though those often lacked specifics. The data is not intended to be definitive, but does show how a wide sample of companies have raised prices even as profits jumped. After earnings call, executives made no secret of their strategies. As gas prices soared, Chevron's 240% profit spike was part of the best two quarters the company has ever seen, prompting a dividend increase and assurances it would keep production low to maintain high prices. Steel Dynamics profits increased by 809%. The company was not materially affected by inflation as higher prices exceeded increased supply chain costs. Fertilizer giant Nutrien's profits shot up by about $1.2 billion on higher selling prices that more than offset higher raw material costs and lower sales volume. Nike's 53% profit increase, driven by higher prices, was only partially offset by supply chain and inflationary cost increases. The analysis found commodity companies trading in oil, timber, rubber, meat, wheat, steel, and mining recorded the highest profit increases, while restaurants and retailers saw comparatively lower improvements or losses. Martin Schmalz, an Oxford University economist, noted commodity prices spikes reverberate down the supply chain, eventually hitting the consumer. He added, "The Guardian's data objectively shows a massive transfer of wealth from consumers who pay higher prices to shareholders and investment firms that reap the benefits." Even as profits skyrocket, many have dismissed the idea they play a meaningful role in inflation, including Larry Summers, a former Obama advisor with clout in the Biden White House. He previously called profiteering claims business bashing, that are terrible economics. A Hershey spokesperson stressed that its growth was driven in part by volume, and it would be reinvesting much of its profits to meet growing demand. He said, "These investments are where we are making the biggest use of cash." Financial observers have varying takes on whether companies are profiteering or price gouging or simply profiting. George Parks, an analyst at Bespoke Investment, pointed to Caterpillar, which recorded a 958% profit increase driven by volume growth and price realization between 2019 and 2021's fourth quarter. Eliminating price increases may have dropped the company's 2021 quarter four operating profits slightly below the $1.3 billion it made in 2020. George Parks said, "This isn't price gouging, and it shows pretty concretely that there's a lot of nuance there." Adding, "Profiteering is not the primary driver of inflation, nor the primary driver of corporate profits." However, he added that it's reasonable to question whether Caterpillar should have passed on its cost increases to its customers. Brown noted the company also spent $5 billion on buybacks last year, and $1.3 billion for a quarter of profits is still high, especially in the context of American workers' shrinking wages. She said companies have access to massive capital. They could have one or two years that are more painful, not even more